Hello, everyone. Welcome to a bonus episode of How There Is a Name to Our Podcast. Josh, what's our podcast called?
Where There's a Willis, There's a Way.
Yeah. See, I was testing you all along. The real tests were the podcasts we found along the way. This episode, nothing to do with Bruce Willis, really. We just, what we're going to do in this episode is we have a couple random topics we're going to cover. We're going to talk about some new information that's come out about the new Superman movie. And then we're going to do an in-depth discussion on the new Denis Villeneuve movie, Dune. We're really hitting this one just as the public is like getting out there to watch Dune. This is like synergy and timeliness is what we're known for here.
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. For those of you that aren't aware, we're recording this on March, whatever day Dune 2 released.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
March Dune. Yeah. if it took you that long to, if it took you till, I don't know, mid-May to listen, that's on you, listener.
Yeah. Yeah.
But actually, that brings up a good topic, Josh, King of Segways. That's what we call him here.
Yep.
So you may be thinking, what, two bonus episodes in a row? Yeah, that's called back-to-back bonus bonanza bundays. It's like bonus bundays is what we call them.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah.
So what our plan is to do after we release this episode, we will be covering the Die Hard 4. And that,
which is called?
Live Free or Die Hard? Die Hard with a Vengeance? Die Hard with a Vengeance, right?
No, Die Hard with a Vengeance is the third one. After Die Hard 2, they just fucking throw naming conventions to the wind. Live Free and Die Hard? Live Free or Die Hard?
Yeah, Live Free or Die Hard. Okay.
Is it or Die Hard or is it?
It's or.
Okay.
So wait, is Die Hard? Yeah, you're right. Die Hard with a Vengeance is 3. And A Good Day to Die Hard is the fifth and final. You know, something that occurred to me. What do you think the title is in German? Do you think they call it A Good Free to the Hard?
They must. I mean, they must.
They don't translate it. They just assume that we just have one German word in the title.
I think that that's probably the way that I would do it if I was German.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. I can't remember if we've talked about this in the past, but sometimes looking up the movie title translations are very funny.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a great one off the top of my head, but it is usually not like a one-to-one translation. Like, they'll translate it to mean something in the other language.
Yeah.
And it is quite funny to me. Speaking of translations, this thing just popped up in the old internet banks about the Chinese translation of Phantom Menace.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't. But it's quite the timely reference at time of recording.
Yeah, I know. And the joke is that the captions are all like related to doing a good job for, instead of like the trade empire and all that stuff, it all has to do about like standing up for your country, or it's all like, because it's like communist propaganda essentially instead of trade relations.
Wow.
Yeah. Quite funny. But that's not at all what we had planned on talking about today. I wanted to bring up a couple things, and then you had a couple of things to talk about. But I was going to quickly first mention that I did jury duty recently. And I remember you had mentioned you did jury duty not that long ago. Maybe like a month or two ago?
2022, I think is when I did it.
Oh, a month or two ago, exactly?
Yeah, yeah.
It was Multnomah County?
Yeah, it was through Multnomah County.
The courthouse, brand spanking new, less new than it was when you did it, but it is a nice courthouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you actually served on a jury?
I did, yeah. So I was technically an alternate, so I had to be there every single day except for the deliberations day. And then I got an email like weeks later, and it was like, yeah, this person was found guilty on 21 of the 22 charges. And I went, great, that's literally exactly what I would have done. One of them didn't pass the muster, for beyond a reasonable doubt, but everything else I was going, yep, absolutely. So yeah, it was a good experience and a lot to learn about our legal system and everything like that. But yeah, it was also grueling because the case was just so rough. But yeah, what about you?
I did not serve on a jury, but I went through the voir dire process twice.
And, oh yeah.
I found that just that alone to be extremely exhausting.
Yeah.
So yeah. If you're not familiar, what they do is they will, so we had our pool of jurors for like the 2 days I was there was between like 250 and 300 people. And they would just call people in groups of 40 and you'd go to the courtroom and they would need between 7 to 13 or so, I guess, jurors. And I don't know why they sometimes needed a bigger jury. I guess it depends on the charges. But you would sit in this room, and the, you know, so it's like you and 50 strangers, and the judge basically has like a pre-planned list of questions. And each judge did it a little differently, which really made me realize like how much the judge, you know, controls his courtroom. Like it's mostly same stuff, but it's just slightly, it's not like they're using some, you know, county pre-planned booklet or anything. It's like they sat down and were like, well, we got to get this information. We'll do it in these 12 questions.
Yeah.
But you have to like go around and say like where you live, who lives with you, what your job is, what kind of education you have. And then the attorneys will ask people first kind of generally, and then start to hone in on you one by one. But they'll ask you questions like, do you believe people are innocent until proven guilty? And when they ask you that, when they ask you that directly, you're like, yes. And then like, why do you believe that? And you're like,
you have to explain in front of 39 other people plus the judge and legal people,
the foundation of our society, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. You're just babbling. And then, so I did this and I did this for several questions and I don't remember what they all were, but he then would turn to everyone else and go, does anyone here agree with him? And I was like, oh, God, I hope they raise their hand. And, you know, most of them did because it was like a pretty just generic answer of like,
yeah,
you know, states that not having too much power or something. I don't know. But I was just like, woof, this is a lot. And you do that for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then you are, you know, you could go and then I do it again on the second day. And
oh, God.
Then they're just like, OK, goodbye. We don't need you.
And yeah. Were you pretty high on the numbers both time, like 38, 35
The first time I was number 39.
Yeah.
The second time I was number 7 and they were calling 7 people.
So you must have been struck for some reason or another.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, you know, people were telling me before doing this like, "Oh, if you don't want to serve on a jury, act super interested." Or everyone was giving you like your tips and tricks or whatever. And there was one guy in that group who went on and on and on about how he was like a true crime fan. And he was like, I don't know. He was a younger guy. I don't know how old. Like he lived with his parents, but obviously he had to be at least 18. So I don't know how old he was. You know, when he was like, I love true crime shows, true crime podcasts, like that was all of his interests. And the attorneys kind of like honed in on that. But then he didn't have an excellent grasp on, like, I wouldn't call myself like a true crime fan or a fan of legal drama, but I at least understood like court proceedings and he did not. They were like asking him questions and he was like, I don't know. But then he got picked and he was like way down in the numbers and they picked him.
Wow. So
I was like, I guess they liked his love of true crime. This guy, the person who the court case we were doing for this one was someone was charged with criminal mischief. Unclear as to what that means. That's all we could know.
Yeah. Because they read off the charges for you during the voir dire. Is it voir dire? Is that how you pronounce it? Voir dire. Thank you.
And then that same one, the judge also recused several people because they were like, I don't think, like, you know, they'd ask you if they don't have enough evidence to prove the case but you just have a gut feeling, what would you do? And this woman was like, I don't know, half guilty. And the judge is like, no, you gotta go.
What a super shitty answer.
I mean, she was honest. She's like, yeah, if I have a gut feeling, I don't think I could say innocent. And I was like, well, yeah, thanks for being honest, I guess.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah. This is funny. Yeah. The judge just stepped in and he's like, okay, bye-bye.
Yeah. When we were doing the one that I was a part of, they read off the charges for everybody. And it was, like I said, it was 22 charges, including like sexual assault of a minor and a bunch of other really, really tough things. And the judge was like, I need everyone to think to themselves if they can judge fairly or if they have a situation that they've experienced or the close loved one has experienced that would cause them to not judge this person fairly based on the merit of the case. And there, out of like 40 people, I seem to remember there being like 15 people that raised their hand asking to be excused because of that. And I was just, wow, like, Jesus Christ. What a sad sort of state of our yeah, society and the people, yeah, that live, absolutely, in it and everything.
You only did, yeah, 1 year once, and that was the one you got picked for?
Exactly, yeah. And I was pretty high on the numbers too. And I think that me being a poli-sci person, typically they don't want somebody who's like a legal expert or a poli-sci person just because they can be a little bit annoying. You don't tend to want somebody who knows about jury nullification on a jury. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to ever be selected for a jury, or if you do want to be selected for a jury, maybe don't look up jury nullification. but yeah, it's interesting. And I had a remarkable time with it. It wasn't super pleasant or anything like that. And my work was like, well, yeah, we'll excuse you for work, but we're not going to pay you anything. So I got paid like pennies on the dollar.
The $15 a day or whatever.
Just jacked. Yeah. So that was kind of terrible, but it was a good experience and everything. One thing I was going to say too, just for anybody who's out there listening and you haven't been selected for jury duty yet, or you don't know what you'd do if you did get selected, the thing that I would really encourage you to do, and somebody else pointed this out to me, is that the people who will take on jury cases, jury duty, are the people who are oftentimes older, have nothing better going on, and are well off economically. And if you are somebody that doesn't fit into all three of those boxes, you kind of have a duty to show up and bring outside perspectives. A poor person is going to have a different look on certain crimes than a person who's really, really well off. A younger person is going to have a different perspective on crimes than somebody who's older. And it's important as a part of the process to be there and be honest with how you feel about everything and answer truthfully, but don't try to dodge it. I would encourage you not to try to dodge it, because I think that society benefits when regular people continue to be a part of the process. So anyways,
Really well said. Totally agree. One other thing I was going to mention is you really see how equalizing it is. Like they spend a lot of time telling you how important it is, jury duty is, like over and over and over and over again. You know, you watch videos, they come talk to you, each judge reiterates over and over and over again how important it,
yeah,
is. And yeah, part of going around and everyone saying like where they live, what they do, you know, what their job is, you can see, you know, you have people, there was like one guy who was like an executive with a master's degree, you know, worked in like a high powered job. Another guy had like some homeschooling, like that was his education. And, you know, they're both sitting there in the same seat with the same level of power. It was cool, but I was not prepared for it, just how emotionally exhausting it was. And I didn't even serve on a jury. So
yeah.
Anyway, good stuff. Good stuff.
Yep. Oh yeah. Cool. Cool. I also had some minor updates happen in my life, and I was going to share some of those with you too. I said top of the episode, we were trying to get the next episode scheduled, and I was like, well, I can't do this date because I'm moving that date and it is like 3 weeks away. And Kendrick goes, wow, that seems really sudden. And I was like, oh, right. So the backstory to that is I had I work for a self-storage company, and the self-storage company has two different types of property managers, one that lives on-site and then one that lives off-site. It just depends on what the store is. A lot of the newer builds do not have an apartment on-site. A lot of the older builds do. And one was going to be coming available and, in fact, did become available slightly sooner than it would have been otherwise. My coworker was older and actually ended up passing away before like the month that they were set to retire. It's brutal. And like that person's kids like want nothing to do with collecting any of the like personal items. So literally today, the apartment was junk hauled away, like everything that was inside of it, all of this person's life and memories and stuff like that. Like there's a few boxes of mementos, but everything else has been tossed. And what a shitty sort of experience that would be as a human. And it really put in perspective like how much I don't want to be working until the day I die and how I actually want to enjoy retirement. Made me think a lot more about my savings and all that sort of jazz. But regardless, I'm moving. I'm going to be living on site. So still in a job that I don't necessarily 100% love, but I'm fine with. But the rent that I'm going to have to pay is only $150 a month. And it's a 2-bedroom. So it's really, really good rates. So we're going to try saving up this next year, putting basically all of Hannah's money into savings if we can, and then just living off of my money. And then ideally that next year we'll be able to buy a house. But yeah, that's what's going on.
Nice. Congrats. Yeah. That sounds fun.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
That's good. Exciting. Yeah. Awesome. Glad to hear it. Okay. I wanted to quickly talk about the Superman still that was released. Have you seen that?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we've talked off and on this here podcast feed about our feelings about superhero movies. And I know that you've mentioned that you are more of a DC fan. I think I would say traditionally I'm probably a little more DC fan, though at this point I don't know if I would say, you know, I prefer one over the other. But I am excited about the James Gunn Superman movie. What are your feelings after seeing this image?
I mean, I'm kind of with the rest of the internet on the suit looking a little bit too loose. I'm excited that they went without the underpants look. I think that the underpants on Superman look bad. And I like that they just went for like more of the blue suit sort of style. But he looks great as Superman. He totally checks those boxes for like the kind of stereotypically masculine, well-defined jaw, that sort of character that I think of when I think of Superman. So I'm excited. I think it's probably going to be a lot of fun. We're going to see, like, one thing I'm a little bit worried about is how many other characters are in this movie. Like, Hal Jordan is in this movie. I think Plastic Man or Elastic Man or Mr. Stretch or Dr. Slinky or whatever. One of those guys who can stretch is in it, too.
The knockoff Mr. Fantastic?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking up the cast right now. Anthony Carrigan is in this show? Wow. As Metamorpho.
That can't be who I'm thinking of. Who am I thinking of?
I'm excited. I don't really know anything about this David Corn Sweat person. Who's the actor playing Superman? I have seen Pearl, which he was in. But otherwise, I don't think I've seen anything.
I'm really excited for Nicholas Holt to be Lex Luthor. I think that's going to be fun.
Yeah, me too. I love him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the image itself looks kind of goofy. Going back to the actual image of James or the James Gunn Superman. Just him sitting there pulling his boot on. I don't know. That just idea seems silly. Like, would he have like a rock in his shoe or something? Like, is he taking it off?
Maybe.
Putting it on?
Maybe.
And I've seen the background edited so many times. I actually don't know what the legitimate background is supposed to be.
Yeah, I saw one that was like a big old like star looking thing, almost like the thing that was in The Suicide Squad. And I was going, is this the same thing? And then I thought it looked like AI. And then I got confused, and then I exited out of the page. I got scared and confused.
So. I forgot about... Yeah, it's like a giant eyeball or something, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm super excited. I just recently, within the last month, watched the third Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, James Gunn's like final Marvel movie.
Well, and the last, rumored to be the last watchable Marvel movie as well.
I didn't see the Marvels, and I didn't see, wasn't there one more that came out last year?
Ant-Man?
Ant-Man came out before. I did watch remember. Ant-Man, which wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it was pretty bad. But yeah, so Guardians, never mind. I never like loved that franchise. I thought it's fun at times, but I didn't have a huge affinity for it that I know that some people did, but I still got a little emotional at the end. Like, it's wrapping up the trilogy, and there's a lot of emotional beats at the end that I was affected by, and I was like, damn you, James Gunn.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, he's great at telling like a story of a bunch of weirdos, and I think that the Suicide Squad kind of follows that same sort of pattern. And yeah, he's great at it. So I'm really curious to see how he's going to do Superman, because I wouldn't really describe Superman stories typically as a misfit bunch of weirdos. But we'll see.
Right. Yeah, Superman is such a hard story to tell because he's like a god figure with and so what modern Zack Snyder has tried to make him like a bad guy or a moody asshole, and that's, you know, not what I feel like Superman ethos is. But at the same time, if you don't want to go camp, which I feel like my favorite Superman is when it gets campy, like when the movie is spending a lot of time him going back and forth as Clark Kent and Superman, and like Lois is like, what's going on here? Like, that's the kind of stuff I enjoy, because
it's absurd.
That's absurd.
It's
and like
great.
Otherwise there's no stakes, and like either it's just some ridiculous big blue beam in sky that Superman has to of course save the day, or you have a bunch of silliness. But anyway, I'm excited. One last topic I wanted to talk about before we get into our Dune scush as it's called is this Kendrick Lamar and Drake rap beef. Now, I would be the first to say that I don't follow beefs in general. I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat.
Yeah, right.
I don't eat
that
meat. I don't follow any beef anywhere. But I'm in a Slack group, and it was formed originally around a movie podcast, so it is like, I don't know, 2,000 to 3,000 people maybe, and it's mostly all film related discussions.
Yeah.
There is a gossip channel, and it is mostly Taylor Swift gossip. And I actually don't read it very often because I really don't care about Taylor Swift gossip.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when I made my Slack account 7 or 8 years ago by now, I foolishly made one of the highlight words my name. And it has made me constantly go over the last week. Oh, someone is messaging me. No. Oh, I got a new message. Oh, no.
Oh,
this person called. No. And now people are actually starting to apologize to me, which is doubling up the amount of times my name gets pinged. And to make it all the worse, I can't figure out how to undo the highlight word setting. Slack has changed its configuration so many times that now I am lost, and I can't figure out how to turn it off. So that's my comedic anecdote about the Kendrick and Drake beef. I, of course, team Kendrick. For obvious reasons. But for
obvious reasons.
Non-obvious reasons is that he's the better artist. So he's going to have the better diss tracks. But I haven't actually listened to any of the diss tracks. Have you?
Yeah. Yeah, I listened to whatever the Drake one was that came out right before the two like absolute bodies that Kendrick Lamar did. So Kendrick Lamar did Not Like Us, which is a certified banger, 10 out of 10, no notes. And then Meet the Grams is crazy as well. And that came out just like less than 24 hours before that one. And then I heard whatever the Drake song was that was before that. And that one was also pretty good. But I'm not a huge Drake fan at all. And I don't know if like Kendrick has at this point been accused of, Kendrick Lamar has been accused at this point of beating his wife. And if he did that, obviously I don't like him and I wouldn't support him. But so he's not totally clean. But Drake, on the other hand, is a open secret pretty well known for being a pedophile or somebody that associates closely with pedophiles, and I am excited to see somebody get bodied over that. Mm-hmm. So yeah
it's like one of those things where there's a lot of allegations and serious allegations, and I doubt we're gonna see it go to trial. So are we ever gonna really find out the truth? I don't know.
I have no idea. Well, and did you hear that one of Drake's bodyguards just got shot recently?
Yes. I saw that headline that he got shot, and then also The Weeknd was somehow involved.
Yeah, it's like The Weeknd's manager or something like that is somehow connected to it. I don't know. I'm really unqualified to talk about all this stuff. I just like the song Not Like Us. So.
we need someone to email us and let us know the real lowdown.
Yeah, what's the real deal?
Yeah. Put some chicken in our beef. Okay. Well, with that, let's talk about Dune.
Something we are qualified to talk about.
Yeah. Dr. Dune is what they call us.
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking we'll do for this discussion is we will give our overall non-spoiler thoughts on Dune, both as like a franchise and specifically the Denis Villeneuve movie. And then I want to talk, then I think we should talk a little bit about, do you want to talk about non-Denis Villeneuve stuff first?
Yeah, I think we'll get that out of the way. It'll be a lot shorter for the most part, unless you have just a ton of shit to say about the Sci-Fi Channel adaptations.
I don't. So I guess we can briefly mention it. So Dune was originally written many years ago.
1968.
When I look up Dune, it just says it's set in the year 10,191.
That's actually not even true, though. It's 10,991 years after the start of like the space age. Or after the start of.
According to Audible.com, it says 20,000 years from now.
Yeah, 20,000 years from now, basically. Yeah.
So it's 10,191. Anyway, written in the year of our Lord, 1965.
Oh, okay.
By Frank Herbert, actually inspired by the Oregon Dunes, and along with the war in the Middle East and psychotropic drugs. But after coming out in 1965, there have been several attempts to bring it to screen. There was a man, Yodorowsky, who tried to make a movie in the 70s, and he actually made a bunch of concept art and he was a Mexican filmmaker. And there's a documentary called Yodorowsky's Dune that I would recommend to anybody who loves this work. But it predates Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of people, you can link Star Wars as being inspired by Dune. A lot of people were sad that this version of Dune wasn't released, because the fact that it would have come out before Star Wars would have really emphasized Star Wars is just a riff on Dune. But that movie was never made for a whole bunch of reasons. And it actually, this documentary goes into just the wild story of everything that went on and his vision for it. And then in 1984, David Lynch tried, well, and I guess you could say succeeded, and made a version of Dune. And he just made a single movie. And it is often considered David Lynch's worst movie. I watched this movie when I was a teenager, I think.
Yeah.
And had no idea what was going on. I don't think I had read the book yet. And I was extremely confused. I just was like, oh, you know, Patrick Stewart is in this movie. I guess I better watch it. Very confusing.
Yeah. It's also got like a 80s grossness to it. Mm-hmm. Like all the puppet practical work. It's just so disgusting. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to watch.
I've been meaning to go back and watch it actually since now that I've read the book and seen the Denis Villeneuve versions. But I haven't seen it in probably almost 20 years. And then there's also a Sci-Fi Channel miniseries that came out around 2000, I think.
Yeah.
And I've never seen that. I think you can find that on YouTube actually. So if you're interested, you can go check that out. Have you seen either of those?
I watched part of the David Lynch one, but I was sick and feverish and I had to turn it off because I was like,
because of Dune
way.
Or
jury's still out actually. sorry to mention jury stuff again, but
I would recommend, maybe we should someday have a get together and watch the David Lynch Dune.
That'd be fun.
So let's talk the Denis Villeneuve version. Non-spoiler overall feelings. On
both. Are you doing non-spoiler for both of them or just the second one?
Let's do non-spoiler for both of them. And then we'll just go straight to Dune 2 spoilers.
Okay, sounds good.
If you have not seen either Dune, I would recommend listen to our non-spoiler overview, then just turn it off. Go Dune both.
Yeah.
Get both Dune.
Yeah.
And then come back.
Yeah. I give both of them a Bruce Willie. So if that means anything to anybody, go watch them.
I think I would agree. But both of them I found to be as equally good. Both of them definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
You want to give a quick, you have any, a quick summary of your feelings?
Sure. Yeah. So I think that they're magnificent in the production value, the cast, the script handles of both movies. It handles the lore pretty well. There's some stuff that we'll talk about lore wise that they maybe had to cut or had to simplify a little bit. But I think that they're just remarkable movies. It doesn't have the same sort of wow, fun adventure feel that I associate with like Star Wars or something along those lines. But it is fantastic, and the everything in it conceptually is just really well executed. There's these flying ships that look like they could exist in reality. I don't know how they did everything with the budget that they had for the CGI. I do know they did a lot of previs, but the previs that they did on it and all the concept art and the storyboarding and Denis' kind of perspective on film, where he likes to try to make movies with as minimal dialogue as possible. So he tries to think of how can I say this with the use of the camera, with how I'm positioning the actors, with lighting and sound and everything. And I think that on those, every single technical level, I think that the Dune movies are just magnificent. So, yeah.
I completely agree. I thought all the acting was well done. We'll get into, in the spoilers, we'll get into some of my favorite characters. But the acting I all found really compelling, and the scope of Dune, both of them, really, I feel like it is extremely captured really well. And everything in Dune is like a mega structure. and it's set against a desert planet. So you have just vast expanses of desert, and then you'll see these mega structures, and they'll either be ships, or they'll be, you know, sand worms, or they'll be dust
giant
collectors,
wall.
Or yeah, walls, or stuff like that. And I thought it all felt so massive.
Yeah.
And I think something that's lost, even in the later, I remember original Star Wars captured a lot of that, and also the prequels captured some of that for me. But I feel like later Star Wars has kind of lost some of the huge scope that Star Wars can really care. Like, unfathomable size of ships or buildings, that scale, that unrealistic scale seems to have kind of be gone from a lot of the newer Star Wars TV shows, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that was really felt for me in the Dune movies.
Do you think that for Star Wars, a lot of it has to do with them switching from models to CG, or do you think that it's something else?
Probably. And they probably maybe consciously or unconsciously just made the decision to try to be less huge size and scope. Quick aside, have you followed the Star Wars news about the new show, The Acolyte?
I saw a little bit on the Star Wars Circle Jerk subreddit, but I haven't looked anything further into it.
So a couple things, and I don't have these quotes in front of me, so I hope I'm not speaking out my acolyte, if you know what I mean. But the showrunner, I believe, was quoted by in an interview as saying that she wanted to avoid using the volume.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you're not familiar, the volume is this technology that all, like, Disney and Marvel and Star Wars and a lot of other stuff use, that sort of creates, like, completely CGI spaces. So when you watch, like, The Mandalorian, and it looks like they're walking around on a planet, they're walking around on, like, a CGI stage, essentially.
Yeah.
So that's called the volume. And when it first came out, it was really exciting, and then everything used it, and now it feels really sterile. So the fact that this showrunner is like, I'm not going to use the volume, I was like, wow. Not only is that kind of mind-blowing that they're going to come out and say that, but it's also really exciting.
Yeah.
That plus Carrie Ann Moss being in the show, I'm pretty stoked.
That is exciting. It hasn't been on my radar at all. I'm still working through Andor, which also didn't use the volume.
Yeah.
And, or didn't use it that much, I guess. And yeah, it's great. And I really, really miss the tactile feeling of Star Wars. I think that's one thing that Star Wars and Dune both have, is that everything feels very tactile and used. Same thing with Alien. I don't get it that much from Star Trek, and I love Star Trek, but that's probably one thing that I would strike against it, is that a lot of the world can sometimes feel very set-ish and not super lived in, versus Star Wars and Dune, which definitely feel lived in.
And Star Trek always, like, chose as a style to be all touchscreen based, starting with Next Gen, and really just leaned into that to be, like, almost, they're not even, you can't tell what they're doing. The actors probably don't even know what they're doing. They're just sort of like waving their hand on the screen, and some stuff's animating, which really removes the tactile feeling. But I think that's, like, the choice they made for the style. They're going for. But anyway, Dune. Anything else you want to say about Dune before we dive into spoilers?
I think it's great. You should definitely watch them. They're on HBO, or you can bug me and I'll buy it on Blu-ray and let you borrow it. So,
is Dune 2 out on streaming?
I don't believe so, no. So I retract my earlier comment. Actually, it might be out on streaming by the time we actually get this episode published.
Yeah, I feel like it's got to be soon.
Yeah.
If it's not, I didn't check, but I was curious if it is.
Yeah.
But Dune the first is definitely And I would recommend both. I rewatched the first Dune, the first Denis Villeneuve Dune, right before seeing the second one, and really enjoyed that experience.
Oh, yeah, same.
Okay, so we're going to start talking about spoilers for both Denis Villeneuve Dune movies. And you have read the book?
I've read the first book, yeah.
Okay, that's all I've read. There's a few book things that I want to save till the end for people who are listening who maybe haven't read the book. There's a handful of differences. We can save those for the end. But, what are your feelings?
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. I'm really excited to see especially where it goes after the end of the movie, because I think that we as the audience are kind of pulled away from Paul the more that the second movie especially goes along. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to see where it goes from there. I was pretty shocked when I watched the first movie, seeing so many well-known actors, just their characters just die. The first movie, almost half of the main cast, if not more, die by the end of that movie. And it's just interesting watching the second movie and seeing all of that space get filled in by these other characters like Stilgar, and you get even more Gurney, and Chani gets some more, a lot of room to grow and be a character in her own right and everything. So, yeah, I liked it a lot. What about you?
I completely agree. What did you feel? So one thing I thought before these came out was I was surprised it was being made into two movies, because the book is not that long as far as books go.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably 300 pages, 350 pages. I'm not sure, but it's not as epic as a lot of other classic sci-fi epics are, which 1200 pages or more. And before watching it, I was kind of like, I don't know why they feel like they need to break it up into two movies. On retrospect, though, I feel like there's no way it could have been one movie. And that's probably part of the reason the David Lynch movie has so much working against it, is because it has to pack in all the backstory, all the lore, explain everything, set everything up, then tell a story.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he had studio limitations on how long the movie was supposed to be, because they wanted to get more butts in seats and have like a quicker turnaround time on the theaters so that they could sell more tickets. So, yeah, I think originally he wanted to make a movie that was a lot longer, like 3 hours or 3.5 hours or something like that. And you could probably tell Dune in 3.5 hours, but I did enjoy two and a half-ish hour long movies and just tell it out a little bit slower. And I think that that worked really well for it.
A couple complaints I had, mainly due probably to studio limitations on this, were when the first one came out, we didn't know for sure that there was going to be a second one.
Yeah.
And also there was 2 years between them. And so watching that first one, Zendaya's character is seen maybe a total of like 15 seconds in a dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they had
And then been, at the very, very end.
Yes. Yeah, right, right. He sees her in a dream, maybe 15 seconds, and then he sees her for maybe 2 minutes at the end.
Yeah.
She says maybe like, I don't know, 5 lines.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish that you hadn't really seen her at all until he meets her at the end. But I feel like they couldn't have not shown Zendaya the whole time, because she's a well-known movie star. Similarly, in the end of Dune 2, when Timothy Chalamet's character, like, is it when he takes the venom, or when does he see his sister grown up standing on the beach?
Yeah, it's when he has the worm juice.
Yeah, and that's played by,
is it Anya?
Yeah,
Anya Taylor, something or other.
Yeah, again, unnecessary for her to be there, but she's a big name, and so they're like, well, we're going to get her in for 20 seconds before the third movie comes out. I'm presuming she's in the third movie, but...
Yeah.
I think if it had been like a miniseries or something where they knew from the beginning that this is how it's going to be, we don't need to worry about the fact there's not going to be a second movie, we could have just saved like the Chani showing up till later and not have it feel like such a letdown.
Yeah.
Because watching that first one and you're like, oh, we're going to see Chani. And then she just shows up for, you know, five lines and you're like, what?
Yeah. I think that's maybe the one issue that the first movie has is that it does feel pretty incomplete, mm-hmm. especially by comparison to the second one. Mm-hmm. But I like some stuff in the first movie a little bit more than the second one. Like, I think that the pacing is a little bit better, and I think it does a little bit better with the lore stuff, too. Because the second one feels like the lore can bog it down a little bit, and I didn't really feel that way at all with the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of sci-fi stuff will do this, where they, if you're on board to see the sequel to a Dune movie, you're on board to handle a lot more lore. So
yeah,
they're willing to throw a lot more at you. Yes, but going back to the actual story, I found the history of Dune to be super fascinating, and how it, you know, was written... like I said, on the sand dunes on the Oregon coast, and Frank Herbert would, I think, come visit his grandma or another relative here and spend his time on the sand dunes and be inspired to write Dune. And then also look at the news and, the Cold War and what was going on in the Middle East and fighting over oil and
like the very start of the space race.
Yeah, and how religion was impacting everything. And so when he wrote Dune, it is very obviously influenced by Islam. And like, you know, they'll say that a lot of the words they say are Islamic. They say jihad a lot in the book, but they cut that from the movie for political reasons. They didn't want people shouting jihad in a movie. And you know, the Ben Gesserit are sort of like Catholic analogs, so you have multiple facets of world religion here, which Frank Herbert hated, you know, religion and how it kind of caused war. And I think all that works really well as like sort of a timeless piece of storytelling, and I thought it was realized really well here. I think the story, a lot of times I'll sort of go into a book, you know, written 60 years ago and kind of think like, oh well, humanity's changed, these sorts of things aren't happening in the same way, but mm-hmm. this story definitely feels timeless. I also this movie, this story, and another story written around the same time called Canticle for Leibowitz. Both of those were post-World War II sci-fi stories set in the far future. And both of them... And actually, I feel like there's another one I'm missing. Talk about the sort of the undoing that the computer will do. And in Dune, their response is to outlaw computers.
Yeah.
And that's why you have the Mentat, which I feel like is another kind of bummer that there's a Mentat and he shows up for 5 minutes in the first movie and then is never heard from again.
Yeah.
But they're
apparently
like,
apparently he filmed scenes for the second one, but they had to get cut because the movie was too bloated.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they're like human computers. And I think that concept also really makes this movie timeless, because it's hard to predict what technology will be like, but if you can somehow in a story eliminate a technology, then you don't have to worry about how it's going to change in real life, because that always makes it feel kind of hokey, where he's like, in 1,000 years they're going to have flying cars, and it's like, in 1,000 years we'll have evolved into plants or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like kind of the slasher film, like modern slasher film problem where you're like, why don't they just use their cell phone? And right. then they have to put in a line about why they can't use their cell phone. Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah, or set the totally movie agree. In the 80s or the 90s.
Yeah.
So I think those things worked together really well to make the story itself super timeless.
Oh, totally agreed. Yeah, 100%.
Let's see, what else? The characters are all great, and the names always crack me up.
Oh, yeah?
Like, Duncan Idaho is quite possibly the funniest name. And also the fact that the lead people are just someone named Paul and someone named Jessica. Like,
yeah.
Here we are, you know, 20,000 years in the future, and Paul is our Messiah.
Yeah.
That to me is also really funny, but I thought that Jessica, Paul's mom, the actress
Jessica, Rebecca Ferguson. Ferguson.
Yeah. I really liked her performance and her like descent into madness. And,
oh yeah.
Also, I love the voice, the concept of the voice.
And how yeah, it's really, really well executed. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to say about the Denis Villeneuve epic Dune series?
I don't know that I really have too much more to add other than what we've said before, but I cannot recommend them enough. I think that they're just amazing pieces of film, and I'm so glad that enough people are seeing them to where they're able to make money and keep making them. Yeah,
I know. As long as Zaslav doesn't shut down WB. Dude. We'll have to save a different time to talk about the potential implosion of Paramount.
Oh yeah. And possible acquisition by Sony or Skydance or who is the
Apollo
other company?
Or something like
oh,
that.
Oh yeah. Was WB possibly going to try to buy them too?
Yeah, that's what reminded me is I think WB was also going to sell off some stuff and potentially buy parts of Paramount. Basically, from what I've read from the trades and other news sources, the potential buyers were the kind of like venture cap firms that would buy things and sell them off for parts.
Yeah.
So not excited, but a lot of those bids have fallen through. So I don't actually know what the current state is, and I don't want to speculate, but. Yeah. We'll save that for a different time. Anyway, we definitely recommend Dune. I did want to have a little chat about the book and the differences. So we'll spoil the first Dune book. I've not read any of the other books. I will say that the movie ends on sort of a cliffhanger as to what the third and final planned Denis Villeneuve movie is. And without having read any spoilers, I kind of get an idea for where it's going. And I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, because it could potentially be a spoiler, but it's speculation. So I don't know.
Speculation on a 55-year-old book.
Yeah. Yeah. So the main differences in the book are Paul's sister is born well before the final conflict happens.
Yeah.
To the point where she's like a 6-year-old or something. I mean, she's a capable person.
She's 2, but she has super brain power because of the worm juice that her mom had.
I thought she was more, I remember her being more physically adept. That's why I thought maybe she was 6. Cause she kills the Duke at the end, right?
Yes, she does. Yeah. She's legit 2. It's so weird.
Yeah. And a complaint is maybe a bit strong, but I did feel a little frustrated that, we're supposed to believe that all of Dune 1 and 2 take place in less than 9 months. Because she gets pregnant either at the very beginning or before Dune 1 starts and is still pregnant at the end of the second Dune movie. And I found it really, it really like tried my suspension of disbelief to think that that was still going on. I think practically it sort of makes sense that they didn't want another child actor to just come in because they're going to replace her with Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah.
And child acting, you know, there's all the rigmarole with that, but
I know how they could have done it though without like making it bad, but
you swap out babies every 5 minutes like they did in the rehearsal.
Yeah, exactly. No, what I think they should have done is they should have had like a little kid and then have it be how everyone else has seen her, and then the moment that she talks, it cuts away to them looking at her, and then when it cuts back, it's Anya Taylor-Joy, and it's their perspective of her because she's so advanced is that she now seems older and everything like that. So you would do most of it with Anya Taylor-Joy and then have the little kid in when a new person is coming into the room or whatever, and then it would suddenly switch. I think that would have been kind of an interesting way to do it and still get Anya Taylor-Joy in it and not have to hear like a young child deliver all these lines. But yeah, the
baby.
Yeah. I mean, they were also just kind of, you're not going to get a 4-year-old or a 6-year-old to come in here and do this and have it make sense within the world that is created visually. Yes. So, yeah.
But
go ahead.
One other thing I was going to say was so part of what I was talking about speculating where it's going to go, it's really hard to tell a story about somebody who can view the future.
Yeah.
And they explain, I don't remember how in detail they go in the movie, but they explain sort of that the way that they do faster than light travel is they have these people who are addicted to spice, and by taking the spice, they can envision like all branches of time. And somehow like use that sort of like transcending time ability and pilot a route that's faster than light. Like that's their sort of,
they like fold space time or whatever.
Yeah. Because they can sort of like be outside of time. So by taking the worm juice and all the spice and everything that Paul has done, and all plus is all of his Bene Gesserit training, he can see the future and understand like the path that gets him there. And that from a storytelling perspective is really hard because we, the viewer, are like, well, there's no conflict. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's going to win that knife battle at the end because he watched like how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
And he knew exactly like where to step and what to say and where to go. And, we didn't even talk about how great, Austin Butler and Skarsgård are as the Harkonnens. Like that.
Oh yeah,
those two are great, and their planet is so cool with the black and white fireworks.
Yeah,
so cool, so cool.
It's so awesome.
But I love the part at the end when they're coming to fight, and Timothy Chalamet is like, "May your knife chip and shatter," and Austin Butler is like, "And also with you."
Yeah. Yeah, Austin Butler is so good in that role. I think he was great. Definitely one of the highlights for me in that movie. But yeah, I get what you're saying though about the challenge of trying to write something and like I guess it has already been written, but trying to show an audience in a way that's going to be interesting and not going to make it feel like there's no stakes. I think that they probably, if you wanted to, you could have shown that there was. That Paul's only seeing glimpses of possibilities of futures and not the literal future of what's going to happen. And the book kind of plays around with that a little bit more than the movie does. I think that might've been like the one avenue, but I kind of also like in the movie where it just detaches us a little bit more from Paul by the end of the movie. And we don't really know what he's going to do, even if he knows exactly what he is going to do. So I think either way, it kind of ended up working. One thing that I did miss, though, from the book to the movie, or actually two things, but I'll do the short one first. I missed that in the book, it specifies that Paul has Mentat training as well as Bene Gesserit training. And so he, in addition to being able to do all the like political intrigue stuff of the Bene Gesserits, he can also do all these quick calculations as well. And that is a big part of why he's able to trust in his own senses and stuff like that, because of his mentat training. And I definitely felt like that was missed in the movie, just because they didn't have the time to spend on the mentats and everything else that they're talking about.
Interesting. I think I had forgotten that. What I was going to say about sort of telling a story about someone who can foresee the future is, yeah, I don't personally remember, and it's only been a couple of years, but I don't remember at the end of reading the book feeling like Paul was the villain. Like, I remember finishing that book and feeling fairly confident that, oh, Paul's still the hero. And I knew that, like, oh, maybe that'll change in a future book. But I was like, this book ends with Paul sort of being like, I'm here. I'm going to try to save these people. I'm going to bring, you know, water to their planet. I had to take these steps, and I got here. And in the movie, it definitely shifts earlier towards, like, Chani is the hero. And that's why at the end of the movie, she sort of is like, I have to go out on my own. And I think that, to me, makes the story more interesting, and I'm excited to sort of see like where the story can go, because I think that the real idea is that messiah figures aren't saviors. Like, they're not going to save us. And yes, he can see the future, but he sees a future where he brings destruction, and he's afraid of that, but he still goes through with it. And so we can assume that he's like going to bring destruction and havoc and kill, you know, tons of people are going to die, and he thinks he's doing the right thing. But he's not the hero of the story. And I think in the book, I remember feeling a lot more like he was the hero, and we should applaud what he's doing. And I did not feel that way at the end of the movie. I think that's a better choice for the movie.
Agreed.
Cause it sets up the further story. And I think the book, I don't know when he wrote the book, if he had the series planned out, or if he wrote the book and it was a success and he's like, okay, I'll continue the story. I don't know. Another thing that was different was in the book, there was a big emphasis on the fact that his parents didn't get married because his mother was a concubine, and the Duke, played by Oscar Isaac, was like, I have to hold out for like a political marriage. And then I don't know if he ever did, but he mentions in the movie that he regrets not marrying his wife, or that Paul's mom. And that was a big deal for him. And in a lot of the Jessica chapters, she sort of is like thinking on that and how hard that was, that she wasn't married and like seen as an official wife.
Yeah.
And then Paul does the same thing with Chani and then the Empress's daughter. He like marries for politics and not for love. And that hit way harder in the book, because you had known what a big deal it was to his parents. And in the movie, if you'd think it would be weird because he's betraying Chani, but I feel like the weight of that decision was lost because they emphasized his parents as much. I don't know how you feel about that.
I feel the same way, and I think that it, more broadly, because Denis doesn't really have an interest in, specifically in dialogue, he's more interested in the visual parts of a story. And he said that. I'm not putting him down for it. That's his preference. I think that the thing that he loses is he loses out on all of the politicking of the book. And that is a big part of it, is the relationships of everybody and how they're all affected by the nobility of these characters and everything like that. And there's a great sequence in the book right before the attack where there's an extended dinner and you get to meet people who are like on Arrakis and are not connected with the Harkonnens, not connected with the Atreides, but they're connected with the Space Guild. And you're going to meet those people, and you're going to meet pirates and other sorts of characters that add extra levels of intrigue to the rest of the story. And Even when Gurney Halleck comes back in the later half of the book, it makes a little bit more sense because like a year and a half has passed. He's working with these people who come onto the planet of Arrakis, mine spice really quick, and then get away before the Harkonnens find them. And in the movie, he just shows up out of nowhere. And I think that Denis kind of opting out of the talking stuff, and partially by necessity, because we don't have 10 hours to spend on a Dune movie, but partially just his choice. I think that those sorts of things, like Paul not choosing Chani at the end, and Lady Jessica not being married to Leto, I think those things kind of come off as a little bit less impactful than in the book. And it's just part of the nature of the beast with who mm-hmm. Denis is and the sort of movie that he wanted to make.
Yeah, I had forgotten about how kind of weird it is that the Emperor is like, oh, shoot, I got to run to Arrakis. Be right back, everybody. And then he just like flies there real quick and then it's like, whoops, we just got completely demolished.
Yeah.
which seems so bizarre in the movie, but makes a little more sense in the books because you understand like how space travel works and also how the... Again, like the politics of it, like the fact that he had used his shock troop Sadokar as part of the Harkonnen like retake over of Arrakis. And so if the other counts found out about that, they would all rebel. And that's sort of like what leads to the civil war at the end. But it's like, I feel like it works pretty well, not having without for people who haven't read the book. And if you have read the book, it just adds a lot more context, which I feel like is about as good as you can ask for.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dune, we loved it. Can't wait to talk about Dune 3 someday. Any other final thoughts on Dune before we wrap it up?
I'm going to read the second book at some point whenever it becomes available at the library, and I'm sure I'll devote a sentence or more to it in a future episode.
Maybe it'll be your sweet treat.
It could be my sweet treat, yeah.
Or your sweet avoidant, your cavity.
Yeah. Am I going to recommend somebody play Baldur's Gate again, or am I going to do Dune 2? Who knows?
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Tune in next time for our discussion on Live Free or Die Hard. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.